None of you will ever make a better deal than the one you made with me tonight." This evoked a more enthusiastic cheer, and everyone drank again. Wiping his mouth, Aleg looked me in the eye.
"So,
what is the first thing you want from us?" I lowered my head. "It's a little thing, really. I don't have a tent of my own. If I'm going to be traveling with my family..."
"Say no more!"
Aleg waved his wooden mug like a king granting a boon.
"You'll have my own tent, piled with furs and blankets a foot deep."
He made a gesture over the fire to where Fran and Josh sat.
"Go set it up for him."
"That's all right," I protested. "I can manage it myself."
"Hush. It's good for them. Makes them feel useful. Speaking of which..."
He made another gesture at Tim.
"Bring them out, would you?"
Tim stood and pressed a hand to his stomach.
"I'll do it in a quick minute. I'll be right back."
He turned to walk off into the woods.
"I don't feel very good." "That's what you get for eating like you're at a trough,"
Otto called after him. He turned back to the rest of us.
"Someday he'll realize he can't eat more'n me and not feel sick afterward."
"Since Tim's busy painting a tree, I'll go get them," Laren said with thinly veiled eagerness.
"I'm on guard tonight," Otto said. "I'll do it."
"I'll get them," Kate said, exasperated.
She stared the other two back into their seats and walked behind the wagon on my left. Josh and Friend came out of the other wagon with a tent, ropes, and stakes.
"Where do you want it?" Josh asked.
"That's not a question you usually have to ask a man, is it, Josh?"
Friend joked, nudging his friend with an elbow.
"I tend to snore," I warned them. "You'll probably want me a little away from everyone else," I pointed.
"Over between those two trees would be fine."
"I mean, with a man, you normally know where they want it, don't you, Josh?"
Friend continued as they wandered off and began to string up the tent. Kate returned a minute later, leading a pair of lovely young girls. One had a lean body and face, with straight black hair cut short like a boy's. The other was more generously rounded, with curling golden hair. Both wore hopeless expressions and looked to be about 16.
"Meet Kryn and Ellie,"
Kate said, gesturing to the girls.
Aleg smiled. "They are one of the ways in which Lavinshire was generous to us. Tonight, one of them will be keeping you warm. My gift to you as the new member in our family."
He made a show of looking them over.
"Which one would you like?"
I looked from one to the other. "That's a hard choice. Let me think on it a little while." Kate sat them near the edge of the fire and put a bowl of stew in each of their hands. The girl with the golden hair, Ellie, ate woodenly for a few bites, then slowed to a stop like a toy winding down. Her eyes looked almost blind, as if she were watching something none of us could see. Kryn's eyes, on the other hand, were focused fiercely into the fire. She sat stiffly with her bowl in her lap.
"Girls," Aleg chided, "don't you know that things will get better as soon as you start cooperating?"
Ellie took another slow bite, then stopped. Kryn stared into the fire, her back stiff, her expression hard. From where she sat by the fire, Anne prodded at them with her wooden spoon.
"Eat!"
The response was the same as before. One slow bite. One tense rebellion. Scowling, Anne leaned closer and gripped the dark-haired girl firmly by the chin, her other hand reaching for the bowl of stew.
"Don't!"
I urged. "They'll eat when they're hungry enough." Aleg looked up at me curiously. "I know what I'm talking about. Give them something to drink instead." The old woman looked for a moment as if she might continue anyway, then shrugged and let go of Kryn's jaw.
"Fine. I'm sick of force-feeding this one anyway. She's been nothing but trouble."
Kate sniffed in agreement.
"Little bitch came at me when I untied her for her bath," she said, brushing her hair away from the side of her face to reveal scratch marks. "Almost took out my damn eye."
"Did a runner, too," Anne said, still scowling.
"I've had to start doping her at night."
She made a disgusted gesture.
"Let her starve if she wants." Laren came back to the fire with two mugs, setting them in the girl's unresisting hands.
Water?
I asked.
Ale, he said. It'll be better for them if they aren't eating.
I stifled my protest. Ellie drank in the same vacant manner in which she had eaten. Kryn moved her eyes from the fire, to the cup, to me. I felt an almost physical shock at her resemblance to Denna. Still looking at me, she drank. Her hard eyes gave away nothing of what was happening inside her head. "Bring them over to sit by me," I said. "It might help me to make up my mind." Kate brought them over. Ellie was docile. Kryn was stiff.
"Be careful with this one," Kate said, nodding to the dark-haired girl. "She's a scratcher."
Tim came back looking a little pale. He sat by the fire where Otto nudged him with an elbow.
"Want some more stew?"
he asked maliciously.
"Sod off,"
Tim rasped weakly. "A little ale might settle your stomach," I advised. He nodded, seeming eager for anything that might help him. Kate fetched him a fresh mugful. By this time, the girls were sitting on either side of me, facing the fire. Closer, I saw things I had missed before. There was a dark bruise on the back of Kryn's neck. The blonde girl's wrists were merely chafed from being tied, but Kryn's were raw and scabbed. For all that, they smelled clean. Their hair was brushed, and their clothes had been washed recently. Kate had been tending to them. They were also much more lovely up close. I reached out to touch their shoulders. Kryn flinched, then stiffened. Ellie didn't react at all. From off in the direction of the trees, Fren called out,
"It's done! Do you want us to light a lamp for you?"
"Yes, please," I called back. I looked from one girl to the other, then to Aleg. "I cannot decide between the two," I told him honestly. "So I will have both." Aleg laughed incredulously. Then, seeing I was serious, he protested.
"Oh, come now. That's hardly fair to the rest of us. Besides, you can't possibly..."
I gave him a frank look.
"Well," he hedged, "even if you can, it..."
"This is the second thing I ask for," I said formally. "Both of them." Otto made a cry of protest that was echoed in the expression of Gaskin and Laren. I smiled reassuringly at them. "Only for tonight." Fren and Josh came back from setting up my tent.
"Be thankful he didn't ask for you, Otto,"
Fren said to the big man.
"That's what Josh would have asked for, isn't it, Josh?"
"Shut your hole, Fren,"
Otto said, exasperated.
"Now I feel ill."
I stood and slung my lute over one shoulder. Then I led both lovely girls, one golden and one dark, toward my tent. Chapter 131, Black by Moonlight. Fren and Josh had done a good job with the tent. It was tall enough to stand in the center, but still crowded with me and both girls standing. I gave the golden-haired one, Ellie, a gentle push toward the bed of thick blankets.
"Sit down," I said gently.
When she didn't respond, I took her by the shoulders and eased her into a sitting position. She let herself be moved, but her blue eyes were wide and vacant. I checked her head for any signs of a wound. Not finding any, I guessed she was in deep shock. I took a moment and dug through my travel sack, then shook some powdered leaf into my traveling cup and added some water from my water skin. I set the cup into Ellie's hands, and she took hold of it absently.
"Drink it,"
I encouraged, trying to capture the tone of voice Valurian had used to gain my thoughtless compliance from time to time. It may have worked, or perhaps she was just thirsty. Whatever the reason, Ellie drained the cup to the bottom. Her eyes still held the same faraway look they had before. I shook another measure of the powdered leaf into the cup, refilled it with water, and held it out for the dark-haired girl to drink. We stayed there for several minutes, my arm outstretched, her arms motionless at her sides. Finally, she blinked, her eyes focusing on me.
"What did you give her?"
she asked.
"Crushed Velia," I said gently. "It's a countertoxin. There was poison in the stew."
Her eyes told me she didn't believe me.
I didn't eat any of the stew.
It was in the ale, too. I saw you drink that.
Good, she said. I want to die.
I gave a deep sigh. It won't kill you. It'll just make you miserable. You'll throw up and be weak with muscle cramps for a day or two. I raised the cup, offering it to her.
Why do you care if they kill me?
She asked tonelessly.
If they don't do it now, they'll do it later. I'd rather die.
She clenched her teeth before she finished the sentence. They didn't poison you. I poisoned them, and you happened to get some of it.
I'm sorry, but this will help you over the worst of it.
Kryn's gaze wavered for a second, then became iron hard again. She looked at the cup, then fixed her gaze on me.
If it's harmless, you drink it.
I can't, I explained. It would put me to sleep, and I have things to do tonight. Kryn's eyes darted to the bed of furs laid out on the floor of the tent. I smiled my gentlest, saddest smile.
Not those sorts of things.
She still didn't move. We stood there for a long while. I heard a muted retching sound from off in the woods. I sighed and lowered the cup, looking down. I saw Ellie had already curled up and gone to sleep. Her face looked almost peaceful. I took a deep breath and looked back up at Kryn.
You don't have any reason to trust me, I said, looking straight into her eyes. Not after what has happened to you. But I hope you will.
I held out the cup again. She met my eyes without blinking, then reached for the cup. She drank it off in one swallow, choked a little, and sat down. Her eyes stayed hard as marble as she stared at the wall of the tent. I sat down, slightly apart from her. In 15 minutes, she was asleep. I covered the two of them with a blanket and watched their faces. In sleep, they were even more beautiful than before. I reached out to brush a strand of hair from Kryn's cheek. To my surprise, she opened her eyes and stared at me. Not the marble stare she had given me before. She looked at me with the dark eyes of a young Denna. I froze with my hand on her cheek. We watched each other for a second. Then her eyes drew closed again. I couldn't tell if it was the drug pulling her under or her own will surrendering to sleep. I settled myself at the entrance of the tent and lay Sasura across my knees. I felt rage like a fire inside me, and the sight of the two sleeping girls was like a wind fanning the coals. I set my teeth and forced myself to think of what had happened here, letting the fire burn fiercely, letting the heat of it fill me. I drew deep breaths, tempering myself for what was to come. I waited for 3 hours, listening to the sounds of the camp. Muted conversation drifted toward me, shapes of sentences with no individual words. They faded, mixing with cursing and sounds of people being ill. I took long, slow breaths as Vachette had shown me, relaxing my body, slowly counting my exhalations. Then, opening my eyes, I looked at the stars and judged the time to be right. I slowly unfolded myself from my sitting position and made a long, slow stretch. There was a solid crescent of moon hanging in the sky, and everything seemed very bright. I approached the campfire slowly. It had fallen to sullen coals that did little to light the space between the two wagons. Otto was there, his huge body slumped against one of the wheels. I smelled vomit.
"Is that you, Kvothe?"
he asked blurrily. Yes. I continued my slow walk toward him.
That bitch Anne didn't let the lamb cook through, he moaned. I swear to holy God, I've never been this sick before.
He looked up at me.
Are you all right?
Sasura leapt, caught the moonlight briefly on her blade, and tore his throat. He staggered to one knee, then toppled to his side, his hands staining black as they clutched his neck. I left him bleeding darkly in the moonlight, unable to cry out, dying, but not dead. I tossed a piece of brittle iron into the coals of the fire and headed toward the other tents. Laren startled me as I came around the wagon. He made a surprised noise as he saw me walk around the corner with my naked sword. But the poison had made him sluggish, and he had barely managed to raise his hands before Sasura took him in the chest. He choked a scream as he fell backward, writhing on the ground. None of them had been sleeping soundly due to the poison, so Laren's cry set them pouring from the wagons and tents, staggering and looking around wildly. Two indistinct shapes that I knew must be Josh and Fren leapt from the open back of the wagon closest to me. I struck one in the eye before he hit the ground and tore the belly from the other. Everyone saw, and now there were screams in earnest. Most of them began to run drunkenly into the trees, some falling as they went. But the tall shape of Tim hurled itself at me. The heavy sword he had been sharpening all evening glinted silver in the moonlight. But I was ready. I slid a second long, brittle piece of sword iron into my hand and muttered a binding. Then, just as he came close enough to strike, I snapped the iron sharply between my fingers. His sword shattered with the sound of a broken bell, and the pieces tumbled and disappeared in the dark grass. Tim was more experienced than me, stronger and with longer reach. Even poisoned and with half a sword, he made a good showing of himself. It took me nearly half a minute before I snuck past his guard with Lover out the window and severed his hand at the wrist. He fell to his knees, letting out a raspy howl and clutching at the stump. I struck him high in the chest and headed for the trees. The fight hadn't taken long, but every second was vital as the others were already scattering into the woods. I hurried in the direction I'd seen one of the dark shapes stagger. I was careless, so when Alec threw himself on me from the shadow of a tree, he caught me unaware. He didn't have a sword, only a small knife flashing in the moonlight as he dove for me. But a knife is enough to kill a man. He stabbed me in the stomach as we rolled to the ground. I struck the side of my head against a root and tasted blood. I fought my way to my feet before he did and cut the hamstring on his leg. Then I stabbed him in the stomach and left him cursing on the ground as I went to hunt the others. I held one hand tight across my stomach. I knew the pain would hit me soon, and after that, I might not have long to live. It was a long night, and I will not trouble you with any further details. I found all the rest of them as they made their way through the forest. Anne had broken her leg in her reckless flight, and Tim made it nearly half a mile despite the loss of his hand and the wound in his chest. They shouted and cursed and begged for mercy as I stalked them through the forest, but nothing they said could appease me. It was a terrible night, but I found them all. There was no honor to it, no glory. But there was justice of a sort, and blood, and in the end, I brought their bodies back. I came back to my tent as the sky was beginning to color to a familiar blue. A sharp, hot line of pain burned a few inches below my navel, and I could tell from the unpleasant tugging when I moved that dried blood had matted my shirt to the wound. I ignored the feeling as best I could, knowing I could do nothing for myself with my hands shaking and no decent light to see by. I'd have to wait for dawn to see how badly I was hurt. I tried not to dwell on what I knew from my work in the Medica. Any deep wound to the gut promises a long, painful trip to the grave. A skilled physician with the right equipment could make a difference, but I couldn't be farther from civilization. I might as well wish for a piece of the moon. I wiped my sword, sat in the wet grass in front of the tent, and began to think. Chapter 132, The Broken Circle. I had been busy for more than an hour when the sun finally peered over the tops of the trees and began to burn the dew from the grass. I had found a flat rock and was using it as a makeshift anvil to hammer a spare horseshoe into a different shape. Above the fire, a pot of oats was boiling. I was just putting the finishing touches on the horseshoe when I saw a flicker of movement from the corner of my eye. It was Kryn peeking around the corner of the wagon. I guessed I'd woken her with the sound of hammering iron.
"Oh my God!"
Her hand went to her mouth, and she took a couple stunned steps out from behind the wagon.
"You killed them!"
"Yes," I said simply, my voice sounding dead in my ears. Kryn's eyes ran up and down my body, staring at my torn and bloody shirt.
"Are..."
Her voice caught in her throat, and she swallowed.
"Are you all right?"
I nodded silently. When I'd finally worked up the courage to examine my wound, I discovered that Falurian's cloak had saved my life. Instead of spilling open my guts, Elag's knife had merely given me a long, shallow cut across my belly. He had also ruined a perfectly good shirt, but I had a hard time feeling bad about that, all things considered. I examined the horseshoe, then used a damp leather strap to tie it firmly to one end of a long, straight branch. I pulled the kettle of oats off the fire and thrust the horseshoe into the coals. Seeming to recover from some of her shock, Kryn slowly approached, eyeing the row of bodies on the other side of the fire. I had done nothing other than lay them out in a rough line. It wasn't tidy. Blood stained the bodies, and their wounds gaped openly. Kryn stared as if she were afraid they might start to move again.
"What are you doing?"
she asked finally. In answer, I pulled the now hot horseshoe from the coals of the fire and approached the nearest body. It was Tim. I pressed the hot iron against the back of his remaining hand. The skin smoked and hissed and stuck to the metal. After a moment, I pulled it away, leaving a black burn against his white skin. A broken circle. I moved back to the fire and began to heat the iron again. Kryn stood mutely, too stunned to react normally. Not that there could be a normal way to react in a situation like this, I suppose. But she didn't scream or run off as I thought she might. She simply looked at the broken circle and repeated,
"What are you doing?"
When I finally spoke, my voice sounded strange to my own ears. "All of the Edema Rue are one family," I explained. "Like a closed circle. It doesn't matter if some of us are strangers to others. We are still family. Still close. We have to be this way, because we are always strangers wherever we go. We are scattered, and people hate us. We have laws, rules we follow. When one of us does a thing that cannot be forgiven or mended, if he jeopardizes the safety or the honor of the Edema Rue, he is killed and branded with the broken circle to show he is no longer one of us. It is rarely done. There is rarely a need." I pulled the iron from the fire and walked to the next body, Otto. I pressed it to the back of his hand and listened to it hiss. These were not Edema Rue, but they made themselves out to be. They did things no Edema would do, so I'm making sure the world knows they were not a part of our family. The Rue do not do the sort of things that these men did.
"But the wagons," she protested. "The instruments."
"They were not Edema Rue," I said firmly. "They probably weren't even real troopers. Just a group of thieves who killed a band of Rue and tried to take their place." Kryn stared at the bodies, then back at me.
"So you killed them for pretending to be Edema Rue?"
"For pretending to be Rue? No." I put the iron back in the fire. "For killing a Rue troop and stealing their wagons? Yes. For what they did to you? Yes."
"But if they aren't Rue..."
Kryn looked at the brightly painted wagons.
"How?"
"I'm curious about that myself," I said, pulling the broken circle from the fire again. I moved to Aleg and pressed it onto his palm. The false trooper jerked and screamed himself awake.
"He isn't dead!"
Kryn exclaimed shrilly. I had examined the wound earlier. "He's dead," I said coldly. "He just hasn't stopped moving yet." I turned to look him in the eye. "How about it, Aleg? How did you come by a pair of Edema wagons?"
"Rue bastard!"
He cursed at me with blurry defiance. "Yes," I said. "I am. And you are not. So how did you learn my family's signs and customs?"
"How did you know?" he asked. "We knew the words. The handshake.
We knew water and wine and songs before supper.
How did you know?
You thought you could fool me? I said, feeling my anger coiling inside me again like a spring. This is my family. How could I not know? Rue don't do what you did. Rue don't steal. Don't kidnap girls.
Aleg shook his head with a mocking smile. There was blood on his teeth.
Everyone knows what you people do.
My temper exploded.
Everyone thinks they know! They think rumor is the truth! Rue don't do this!
I gestured wildly around me.
People only think those things because of people like you!
My anger flared even hotter, and I found myself screaming.
Now tell me what I want to know, or God will weep when he hears what I've done to you!
Aleg paled, and had to swallow before he found his voice.
There was an old man, and his wife, and a couple other players. I traveled guard with them for half a year. Eventually, they took me in.
He ran out of breath and gasped a bit as he tried to get it back. He'd said enough.
So you killed them?
Aleg shook his head vigorously.
No. We were attacked on the road.
He gestured weakly to the other bodies.
They surprised us. The other players were killed, but I was just knocked out.
I looked over the line of bodies and felt the rage flare up, even though I'd already known. There was no other way these people could have come by a pair of Edema wagons with their markings intact. Aleg was talking again.
I showed them afterward. How to act like a troop.
He swallowed against the pain.
Good life.
I turned away, disgusted. He was one of us, in a way. One of our adopted family. It made everything 10 times worse knowing that. I pushed the horseshoe into the coals of the fire again, then looked to the girl as it heated. Her eyes had gone to flint as she watched Aleg. Not sure if it was the right thing to do, I offered her the brand. Her face went hard, and she took it. Aleg didn't seem to understand what was about to happen until she had the hot iron against his chest. He shrieked and twisted, but lacked the strength to get away as she pressed it hard against him. She grimaced as he struggled weakly against the iron, her eyes brimming with angry tears. After a long minute, she pulled the iron away and stood, crying quietly. I let her be. Aleg looked up at her and somehow managed to find his voice.
Ah, girl. We had some good times, didn't we?
She stopped crying and looked at him.
Don't.
I kicked him sharply in the side before he could say anything else. He stiffened in mute pain and then spat blood at me. I landed another kick, and he went limp. Not knowing what else to do, I took back the brand and began heating it again. There was a long silence.
Is Ellie still asleep? I asked.
Kryn nodded.
Do you think it would help for her to see this?
She thought about it, wiping at her face with a hand.
I don't think so, she said finally. I don't think she could see it right now. She's not right in her head.
The two of you are from Levenshire? I asked to keep the silence at arm's length.
My family farms just north of Levenshire, Kryn said. Ellie's father is mayor.
When did these come into your town? I asked as I set the brand to the back of another hand. The sweet smell of charred flesh was becoming thick in the air.
What day is it?
I counted in my head. Felling.
They came into town on Thaden.
She paused.
5 days ago?
Her voice was tinged with disbelief.
We were glad to have the chance to see a play and hear the news. Hear some music.
She looked down.
They were camped on the east edge of town. When I came to get my fortune read, they told me to come back that night. They seemed so friendly, so exciting.
Kryn looked at the wagons.
When I showed up, they were all sitting around the fire. They sang me songs. The old woman gave me some tea. I didn't even think. I mean, she looked like my gran.
Her eyes strayed to the body of the old woman, then away.
Then, I don't remember what happened. I woke up in the dark, in one of the wagons. I was tied up and I...
Her voice broke a little, and she rubbed absent-mindedly at her wrists. She glanced back at the tent.
I guess Ellie got an invitation, too.
I finished branding the backs of their hands. I had been planning to do their faces, too, but the iron was slow to heat in the fire, and I was quickly growing sick of the work. I hadn't slept at all, and the anger that had burned so hot for so long was in its final flicker, leaving me feeling cold and numb. I made a gesture to the pot of oats I'd pulled off the fire.
Are you hungry?
Yes, she said, then darted a look toward the bodies. No.
Me neither.
Go wake up Ellie, and we can get you home. Kryn hurried off to the tent. After she disappeared inside, I turned to the line of bodies.
Does anyone object to my leaving the troop? I asked.
None of them did. So I left.
Chapter 133, Dreams. It was an hour's work to drive the wagons into a thick piece of forest and hide them. I destroyed their edema markings and unhitched the horses. There was only one saddle, so I loaded the other two horses with food and whatever other portable valuables I could find. When I returned with the horses, Kryn and Ellie were waiting for me. More precisely, Kryn was waiting. Ellie was merely standing nearby, her expression vacant, her eyes empty.
Do you know how to ride? I asked Kryn.
She nodded, and I handed her the reins to the saddled horse. She got one foot in the stirrup and stopped, shaking her head. She brought her foot back down slowly.
I'll walk.
Do you think Ellie would stay on a horse?
Kryn looked over to where the blonde girl was standing. One of the horses nuzzled her curiously and got no response.
Probably, but I don't think it would be good for her after...
I nodded in understanding.
We'll all walk then.
What is the heart of the Lathani? I asked Vachette.
Success and right action.
Which is the more important, success or rightness?
They are the same. If you act rightly, success follows.
But others may succeed by doing wrong things, I pointed out.
Wrong things never lead to success, Vachette said firmly. If a man acts wrongly and succeeds, that is not the way. Without the Lathani, there is no true success.
Sir? A voice called.
Sir?
My eyes focused on Kryn. Her hair was windblown, her young face tired. She looked at me timidly.
Sir, it's getting dark.
I looked around and saw twilight creeping in from the east. I was bone weary and had fallen into a walking doze after we had stopped for lunch at midday.
Just call me Kvothe, Kryn.
Thanks for jogging my elbow. My mind was somewhere else.
Kryn gathered wood and started a fire. I unsaddled the horses, then fed and rubbed them down. I took a few minutes to set up the tent, too. Normally, I don't bother with such things, but there had been room for it on the horses, and I guessed the girls weren't used to sleeping out of doors. After I finished with the tent, I realized I'd only brought one extra blanket from the troop's supplies. There would be a chill tonight, too, if I was any judge of such things.
Dinner's ready,
I heard Kryn call. I tossed my blanket and the spare one into the tent and headed back to where she was finishing up. She'd done a good job with what was available. Potato soup with bacon and toasted bread. There was a green summer squash nestled into the coals as well.
Ellie worried me.
She had been the same all day, walking listlessly,
never speaking or responding to anything Kryn or I said to her. Her eyes would follow things, but there was no thought behind them. Kryn and I had discovered the hard way that if left to herself she would stop walking or wander off the road if something caught her eye. Kryn handed me a bowl and spoon as I sat down.
"It smells good," I complimented her.
She half-smiled and dished a second bowl for herself. She started to fill a third bowl, then hesitated, realizing Ellie couldn't feed herself.
"Would you like some soup, Ellie?" I asked in normal tones.
"It smells good."
She sat blankly by the fire, staring into nothing.
"Do you want to share mine?"
I asked, as if it were the most natural thing in the world. I moved closer to her and blew on a spoonful to cool it.
"Here you go."
Ellie ate it mechanically, turning her head slightly in my direction toward the spoon. Her eyes reflected the dancing patterns of the fire. They were like the windows of an empty house. I blew on another spoonful and held it out to the blonde girl. She opened her mouth only when the spoon touched her lips. I moved my head, trying to see past the dancing firelight in her eyes, desperately hoping to see something behind them. Anything.
"I bet you're an L, aren't you?" I said conversationally.
I looked at Kryn. "Short for Ellie?" Kryn shrugged helplessly.
"We weren't friends, really. She's just Ellie Anwater, the mayor's daughter."
"It sure was a long walk today," I continued, speaking in the same easy tone.
"How do your feet feel, Kryn?"
Kryn continued to watch me with her serious dark eyes.
"A little sore."
"Mine too. I can't wait to get my shoes off."
"Are your feet sore, Al?"
No response. I fed her another bite.
"It was pretty hot, too. It should cool off tonight, though. Good sleeping weather. Won't that be nice, Al?"
No response. Kryn continued to watch me from the other side of the fire. I took a bite of soup for myself.
"This is truly fine, Kryn," I said earnestly, then turned back to the vacant girl.
"It's a good thing we have Kryn to cook for us, Al. Everything I cook tastes like horse shit." On her side of the fire, Kryn tried to laugh with a mouthful of soup, with predictable results. I thought I saw a flicker in Elle's eyes. "If I had some horse apples, I could make us a horse apple pie for dessert," I offered.
"I could make some tonight if you want."
I trailed off, making it a question. Elle gave the slightest frown. A small wrinkle creased her forehead.
"You're probably right," I said. "It wouldn't be very good."
"Would you like more soup instead?"
The barest nod. I gave her a spoonful.
"It's a little salty, though. You probably want some water." Another nod. I handed her the water skin, and she lifted it to her own lips. She drank for a long, long minute. She was probably parched from our long walk today. I would have to watch her more closely tomorrow to make sure she drank enough.
"Would you like a drink, Kryn?"
"Yes, please,"
Kryn said, her eyes fixed on Elle's face. Moving automatically, Elle held the water skin out toward Kryn, holding it directly over the fire with the shoulder strap dragging in the coals. Kryn grabbed it quickly, then added a belated,
"Thank you, Elle."
I kept a slow stream of conversation going through the whole meal. Elle fed herself toward the end of it, and though her eyes were clearer, it was as if she were looking at the world through a sheet of frosted glass, seeing but not seeing. Still, it was an improvement. After she ate two bowls of soup and half a loaf of bread, her eyes began to bob closed.
"Would you like to go to sleep, Al?" I asked.
A more definite nod.
"Should I carry you to the tent?"
Her eyes snapped open at this, and she shook her head firmly.
"Maybe Kryn would help you get ready for bed if you asked her."
Elle turned to look in Kryn's direction. Her mouth moved in a vague way. Kryn darted a glance at me and I nodded.
"Let's go and get tucked in then," Kryn said, sounding every bit the older sister.
She came over and took Elle's hand, helping her to her feet.
As they went into the tent, I finished off the soup and ate a piece of bread that had been too badly burnt for either of the girls. Before too long, Kryn came back to the fire. "Is she sleeping?" I asked.
"Before she hit the pillow. Do you think she'll be all right?"
She was in deep shock. Her mind had stepped through the doors of madness to protect itself from what was happening. "It's probably just a matter of time," I said tiredly, hoping it was the truth. "The young heal quickly." I chuckled humorlessly as I realized she was probably only about a year younger than me. I felt every year twice tonight, some of them three times. Despite the fact that I felt covered in lead, I forced myself to my feet and helped Kryn clean the dishes. I sensed her growing unease as we finished cleaning up and repicketing the horses to a fresh piece of grazing. The tension grew worse as we approached the tent. I stopped and held the flap open for her. "I'll sleep out here tonight." Her relief was tangible.
"Are you sure?"
I nodded. She slipped inside, and I let the flap fall closed behind her. Her head poked out almost immediately, followed by a hand holding a blanket. I shook my head.
"You'll need them both."
"There'll be a chill tonight." I pulled my shade around me and lay directly in front of the tent. I didn't want Elle wandering out during the night and getting lost or hurt.
"Won't you be cold?"
"I'll be fine," I said. I was tired enough to sleep on a running horse. I was tired enough to sleep under a running horse. Kryn ducked her head back into the tent. Soon, I heard her nestling into the blankets. Then everything was quiet. I remembered the startled look on Otto's face as I cut his throat. I heard Aleg struggle weakly and curse me as I dragged him back to the wagons. I remembered the blood, the way it had felt against my hands, the thickness of it. I had never killed anyone like that before. Not coldly, not close up. I remembered how warm their blood had been. I remembered the way Kate had cried as I stalked her through the woods.
"It was them or me!"
she had screamed hysterically.
"I didn't have a choice! It was them or me!"
I lay awake a long while. When I finally slept, the dreams were worse. Chapter 134, The Road to Levenshire. We made poor time the next day, as Kryn and I were forced to lead the three horses and Elle besides. Luckily, the horses were well behaved, as edema-trained horses tend to be. If they had been as wayward-witted as the poor mayor's daughter, we might never have made it to Levenshire at all. Even so, the horses were almost more trouble than they were worth. The glossy roan in particular liked to wander off into the underbrush foraging. Three times now I'd had to drag him out, and we were irritated with each other. I'd named him Burback for obvious reasons. The fourth time I had to pull him back onto the road, I seriously considered cutting him loose to save myself the trouble. I didn't, of course. A good horse is the same as money in your pocket, and it would be quicker to ride back to Severin than walk the whole way. Kryn and I did our best to keep Elle engaged in conversation as we walked. It seemed to help a bit, and by the time our noon meal came around, she seemed almost aware of what was going on around her. Almost. I had an idea as we were getting ready to set out again after lunch. I led our dappled gray mare over to where Elle stood. Her golden hair was one great tangle, and she was trying to run one of her hands through it while her eyes wandered around in a distracted way, as if she didn't quite understand where she was. "Elle?" She turned to look. "Have you met Greytail?" I gestured to the mare. A faint, confused shake of the head. "I need your help leading her. Have you led a horse before?" A nod. "She needs someone to take care of her. Can you do it?" Greytail looked at me with one large eye, as if to let me know she needed leading as much as I needed wheels to walk. But then she lowered her head a bit and nuzzled Elle in a motherly way. The girl reached out a hand to pet her nose almost automatically, then took the reins from me.
"Do you think that's a good idea?" Kryn asked when I came back to pack the other horses.
"Greytail is gentle as a lamb."
"Just because Elle is witless as a sheep,"
Kryn said archly, doesn't make them a good pairing. I cracked a smile at that. We'll watch them close for an hour or so. If it doesn't work, it doesn't. But sometimes, the best help a person can find is helping someone else. Since I had slept poorly, I was twice weary today. My stomach was sour, and I felt gritty, like someone had sanded the first two layers of my skin away. I was almost tempted to doze in the saddle, but I couldn't bring myself to ride while the girls walked. So I plodded along, leading my horse and nodding on my feet. But today, I couldn't fall into the comfortable half-sleep I tend to use when walking. I was plagued with thoughts of Alec, wondering if he was still alive. I knew from my time in the Medica that the gut wound I'd given him was fatal. I also knew it was a slow death. Slow and painful. With proper care, it might be a full span of days before he died. Even alone in the middle of nowhere, he could live for days with such a wound. Not pleasant days. He would grow delirious with fever as the infection set in. Every movement would tear the wound open again. He couldn't walk on his hamstrung leg either. So if he wanted to move, he'd have to crawl. He would be cramped with hunger and burning with thirst by now. But not dead from thirst. No. I had left a full water skin nearby. I had laid it at his side before we left. Not out of kindness. Not to make his last hours more bearable. I had left it because I knew that with water, he would live longer, suffer more. Leaving him that water skin was the most terrible thing I'd ever done, and now that my anger had cooled to ashes, I regretted it. I wondered how much longer he would live because of it. A day? Two? Certainly no more than two. I tried not to think of what those 2 days would be like. But even when I forced thoughts of Alec from my mind, I had other demons to fight. I remembered bits and pieces of that night. The things the false troopers had said as I cut them down. The sounds my sword had made as it dug into them. The smell of their skin as I had branded them. I had killed 2 women. What would Vachette think of my actions? What would anyone think? Exhausted from worry and lack of sleep, my thoughts spun in these circles for the remainder of the day. I set up camp from force of habit and kept up a conversation with El through an effort of sheer will. The time for sleep came before I was ready, and I found myself rolled in my shade in the front of the girls' tent. I was dimly aware that Kryn had started giving me the same worried look she'd been giving El for the past 2 days. I lay wide-eyed for an hour before falling asleep, wondering about Alec. When I slept, I dreamed of killing them. In my dream, I stalked the forest like grim death unwavering. But it was different this time. I killed Otto, his blood spattering my hands like hot grease. Then I killed Laren and Josh and Tim. They moaned and screamed, twisting on the ground. Their wounds were horrible, but I could not look away. Then the faces changed. I was killing Taren, the bearded ex-mercenary in my troop. Then I killed Trip. Then I was chasing Shandy through the forest, my sword naked in my hand. She was crying out, weeping in fear. When I finally caught her, she clutched at me, knocking me to the ground, burying her face in my chest, sobbing, "No, no, no," she begged. "No, no, no." I came awake. I lay on my back, terrified, and not knowing where my dream ended and the world began. After a brief moment, I realized the truth. El had crawled from the tent and lay curled against me, her face pressed against my chest, her hand grasping desperately at my arm.
"No, no,"
she choked out.
"No, no, 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 no."
Her body shook with helpless sobs when she couldn't say it anymore. My shirt was wet with hot tears. My arm was bleeding where she clutched it. I made consoling noises and brushed at her hair with my hand. After a long while, she quieted and eventually fell into an exhausted sleep, still clinging tightly to my chest. I lay very still, not wanting to wake her by moving. My teeth were clenched. I thought of Alec and Otto and all the rest. I remembered the blood and screaming and the smell of burning skin.
I remembered it all and dreamed of worse things I could have done to them. I never had the nightmares again. Sometimes, I think of Aleg and I smile. We made it to Levenshire the next day. Elle had come to her senses, but remained quiet and withdrawn. Still, things went more quickly now, especially as the girls decided they had recovered enough to take turns riding Greytail. We covered 6 miles before we stopped at midday, with the girls becoming increasingly excited as they began to recognize parts of the countryside. The shape of hills in the distance, a crooked tree by the road. But as we grew closer to Levenshire, they grew quiet.
"It's just over the rise there," Kryn said, getting down off the roan. "You ride from here, El."
El looked from her, to me, to her feet. She shook her head. I watched them. "Are the two of you okay?"
"My father's going to kill me."
Kryn's voice was barely a whisper, her face full of serious fear. "Your father will be one of the happiest men in the world tonight," I said, then thought it best to be honest. "He might be angry, too, but that's only because he's been scared out of his mind for the last 8 days. Kryn seemed slightly reassured, but El burst out crying. Kryn put her arms around her, making gentle sounds.
"No one will marry me,"
El sobbed.
"I was going to marry Jason Watterson and help him run his store. He won't marry me now. No one will."
I looked up to Kryn and saw the same fear reflected in her wet eyes. But Kryn's eyes were angry, while El's held nothing but despair. "Any man who thinks that way is a fool," I said, weighting my voice with all the conviction I could bring to bear. "And the two of you are too clever and too beautiful to be marrying fools." It seemed to calm El somewhat, her eyes turning up at me as if looking for something to believe. "It's the truth," I said. "And none of this was your fault. Make sure you remember that for these next couple days."
"I hate them,"
El spat, surprising me with her sudden rage.
"I hate men!"
Her knuckles were white as she gripped Greytail's reins. Her face twisted into a mask of anger. Kryn put her arms around El, but when she looked at me, I saw the sentiment reflected quietly in her dark eyes. "You have every right to hate them," I said, feeling more anger and helplessness than ever before in my life. "But I'm a man, too. Not all of us are like that." We stayed there for a while, not more than a half mile from town. We had a drink of water and a small bite to settle our nerves, and then I took them home. Chapter 135, Homecoming. Levenshire wasn't a big town. 200 people lived there, maybe 3 if you counted the outlying farms. It was mealtime when we rode in, and the dirt road that split the town in half was empty and quiet. Elle told me her house was on the far side of town. I hoped to get the girls there without being seen. They were worn down and distraught. The last thing they needed was to face a mob of gossipy neighbors. But it wasn't meant to be. We were halfway through the town when I saw a flicker of movement in a window. A woman's voice cried out,
"Elle?"
And in 10 seconds, people began to spill from every doorway in sight. The women were the quickest, and inside a minute, a dozen of them had formed a protective knot around the two girls, talking and crying and hugging each other. The girls didn't seem to mind. Perhaps it was better this way. A warm welcome might do a lot to heal them. The men held back, knowing they were useless in situations like this. Most watched from doorways or porches. 6 or 8 came down onto the street, moving slowly and eyeing up the situation. These were cautious men, farmers and friends of farmers. They knew the names of everyone within 10 miles of their homes. There were no strangers in a town like Levenshire, except for me. None of the men were close relatives to the girls. Even if they were, they knew they wouldn't get near them for at least an hour, maybe as much as a day,
so they let their wives and sisters take care of things. With nothing else to occupy them, their attention wandered briefly past the horses and settled on to me. I motioned over a boy of 10 or so. "Go tell the mayor his daughter's back. Run!" He tore off in a cloud of road dust, his bare feet flying. The men moved slowly closer to me, their natural suspicion of strangers made 10 times worse by recent events. A boy of 12 or so wasn't as cautious as the rest and came right up to me, eyeing my sword, my cloak. "What's your name?" I asked him.
"Pete."
"Can you ride a horse, Pete?" He looked insulted.
"Snuff."
"Do you know where the Walker farm is?" He nodded.
"About north 2 miles by the millway."
I stepped sideways and handed him the reins to the roan. "Go tell them their daughter's home. Then, let them use the horse to come back to town." He had a leg over the horse before I could offer him a hand up. I kept a hand on the reins long enough to shorten the stirrups so he wouldn't kill himself on the way there. "If you make it there and back without breaking your head or my horse's leg, I'll give you a penny," I said.
"You'll give me 2, he said.
I laughed. He wheeled the horse around and was gone. The men had wandered closer in the meantime, gathering around me in a loose circle. A tall, balding fellow with a scowl and a grizzled beard seemed to appoint himself leader.
"So, who are you?"
he asked, his tone speaking more clearly than his words. "Who the hell are you?" "Quoth," I answered pleasantly. "And yourself?"
"Don't know as that's any of your business," he growled. "What are you doing here?"
"What the hell are you doing here with our 2 girls?
"God's mother, Seth," an older man said to him. "You don't have the sense God gave a dog. That's no way to talk to the..." "Don't give me any of your lip, Benjamin," the scowling man bristled back. "We got a good right to know who he is."
He turned to me and took a few steps in front of everyone else.
"You one of those trooper bastards what came through here?"
I shook my head and attempted to look harmless. "No."
"I think you are. I think you look kinda like one of them Rue. You got them eyes."
The men around him craned to get a better look at my face.
"God, Seth!" the old fellow chimed in again. "None of them had red hair. You remember hair like that. He ain't one of them."
"Why would I bring them back if I'd been one of the men who took them?" I pointed out. His expression grew darker, and he continued his slow advance.
"You getting smart with me, boy? Maybe you think all of us are stupid here. You think if you bring them back, you'll get a reward, or maybe we won't send anyone else out after you."
He was almost within arm's reach of me now, scowling furiously. I looked around and saw the same anger lurking in the faces of all the men who stood there. It was the sort of anger that comes to a slow boil inside the hearts of good men who want justice, and finding it out of their grasp, decide vengeance is the next best thing. I tried to think of a way to calm the situation, but before I could do anything, I heard Kryn's voice lash out from behind me.
"Seth, you get away from him!"
Seth paused, his hands half raised against me.
"Now."
Kryn was already stepping toward him. The knot of women loosened to release her, but stayed close.
"He saved us, Seth," she shouted furiously. "You stupid shit-eater, he saved us! Where the hell were all of you? Why didn't you come get us?"
He backed away from me as anger and shame fought their way across his face. Anger won.
"We came," he shouted back. "After we found out what happened, we went after him. They shot out Bill's horse from under him, and he got his leg crushed. Jim got his arm stabbed, and old Cupper still ain't waked up from the thumping they gave him. They almost killed us."
I looked again and saw anger on the men's faces, saw the real reason for it, the helplessness they had felt, unable to defend their town from the false troops' rough handling. Their failure to reclaim the daughters of their friends and neighbors had shamed them.
Well, it wasn't good enough! Kryn shouted back hotly, her eyes burning. He came and got us because he's a real man! Not like the rest of you who left us to die!